You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
How time passes, doesn't it? Believe it or not, we've already got another Thanksgiving behind us, and that means Christmas is coming up next. This year is almost gone. Time flies, well, time flies regardless of if you're having fun or not. And likewise, it's already in time for installment number 42 of the Church of the Lampshade show. Time is definitely flying when we have fun when it comes to doing this show. Glad you could join us this week. It just dawned on me, I should have done a Thanksgiving show last week. But I always think of these things after the fact. Thanksgiving is past us. And as always, I usually record this show on the weekend. So, yeah, just a fresh back from enjoying Thanksgiving. Hope you and yours had a great Thanksgiving as well. As I said, installment number 42 of the Church of the Lampshade show. Looking forward to doing this show. Looking forward to sitting down and visiting with all of you. And hopefully you look forward to it as well. But of course you do. How could you not look forward to doing this show? I want to, as always, start off thank you to those who are financially supporting this show. It's kind of thin this week. Thin and sad. I'm going to just chalk that up to it's the holidays. Everybody's out and about and traveling. And also, you can't ever overlook the possibility of the diversity post office stacking the mail up and delivering it later when they get a chance. But either way, two supporters this week, including one Bitcoin Anon. Thank you, Bitcoin Anon. Much appreciated. And also, thank you to one of our most trustworthy weekly supporters, Mr. T. Grandpa Lampshade, hope all is well. Well, it all is pretty much well as I guess could be expected. Things are what they are here in the Lampshade world, and hope all is well with you and yours. And that goes for all of you listeners. Like I say, if you want to be in on financially supporting the show, that information's down at the bottom. We've got Bitcoin. We've got snail mail. If you've got a different cryptocurrency, just give me a shout. Give me an email. I'll get you an address for that. Speaking of email, that's down there as well. GrandpaLampshade1@gmail.com. Listener questions, comments, always welcome. Usually makes my life kind of easier because I can just sit there and let you kind of pick the topics. And, you know, it appeals to my lazy side. On a separate programming note, you may wind up at some point, you probably will wind up noticing, I'm trying to not be sneezing and hacking all over the microphone during this week's show. My sinuses are horrible today, so bear with me on that. No, I'm not sick. It's just this weather can't seem to make up its mind what it's going to do, and as a result, this is the result of that. So bear with me. If you do notice that, that's what's going on there. So yeah, not a lot to go on with on the listener mailbag this week. So we'll just get on into our thoughts and discussions this week. Again, I hope all of you had a safe and good and happy Thanksgiving. Thankful for the things you do have. It's so easy to wind up focusing on the things you don't have, and you get zeroed in on those, and you don't appreciate the things you do have. And it's an easy trap to fall into. In fact, I would say pretty much everybody at some point in time winds up falling into that, and it's something to be avoided. You know, it's great to have things you want, you know, goals that you set. You know, I mean, I'm one of those people. I got to have something I'm working towards or something I'm hoping to achieve or something, you know, to work towards something you're reaching for. And I think that's a good thing. And I imagine most people are like that. I imagine most of you are like that. But the only problem with that is you get sometimes so fixated on that you don't really take the time to enjoy the things that you have now, you know, the things you do have. You know, and you just kind of, you miss that, you know, you overlook that because you get so focused on the things you don't have yet. And I think it's an appropriate time of the year to take the time to really, you know, think about the things that you do have. Just enjoy where you're at now as best you can. I mean, sometimes, you know, you're in a rough spot and it's hard to enjoy anything that you have. You know, it sounds It sounds like a cliche, but if you've got your health, I mean, you can enjoy that. And I'm one of those people, I'm generally pretty healthy. So when I do get sick, I'm one of those horribly miserable people when I do get sick. If I get the flu or something, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm dying, you know, because I take my health for granted. You know, I enjoy being healthy and being able to go outside or do whatever. And so that when I do, on the occasions that I do feel under the weather, wow, I really appreciate my good health when I don't have it. And I guess that's kind of the thing. You don't want to wait until you don't have something, you know, you lose something to then appreciate it and feel that loss. So, you know, just take the time to appreciate and enjoy the things you do have. I mean, things you can do. You can enjoy listening to this show. And that right there is something to be thankful for. And as we sit here and reflect and ponder various questions of the day, I was sitting around drinking my morning coffee, and I'll just sometimes wind up reflecting on different stuff, and sometimes that stuff is to the point I think, you know, it's worth reflecting with all of y'all and thinking about these things, and such is the case this week. I was sitting around the other morning and enjoying the quiet mornings, and you know, isn't it funny, when you're young, you know, the night, it's all, you'll sleep through the mornings, you hate the mornings, and boy, you know, you'd be up late at night partying with your friends or whatever it is you're doing, you know, and you look forward to the evenings. And the older you get, the more that shifts. And, of course, I'm officially at that point to where, you know, the early mornings, an early quiet morning, that first cup of coffee on a quiet morning of solitude, you know, as the sun is coming up, is now my favorite time of the day. I'm not even sure when that shift happened, honestly. It just kind of snuck up on me. You know, an early quiet morning as the sun comes up, everybody else is asleep or no one is around or whatever the case may be for you. And you just sit there and, you know, that's when I gather and collect my thoughts. And then likewise, I tend to think more clearly in the mornings. That's why most times I try to record this show first thing in the morning. I get about half a cup of coffee down and get in here and start setting up, because it seems like my mind is more clear. And then likewise, I was sitting around enjoying my first cup of coffee in the morning the other day, and I was reflecting on, I thought is worth reflecting on with all of you, and that is, I guess you could say, our pre-sermon or whatever, our discussion this week, our thoughts this week, is on, I would say the topic would be the problem with marriage. You see, the problem with marriage, would you run into a conundrum in these political circles? Because on the one hand, you will have people's, you know, the 14 words, you know, we need to be encouraging our men to go out there and get married and have lots of white babies. And that's true. But then you will have an opposing view that is, you know, you're telling men to feed themselves into the Zog family court system meat grinder and get chewed up and wreck and ruin their lives and lose everything they're working for and gang for what? Because they could wind up married to some thought that, you know, after a few years decides to take him to the cleaners and go off and ride the carousel on his money. And that's a valid argument too. And you wind up with, you know, this like clash, you know, and people get really heated over this, you know, and of course you will have the people who say, I've been married for 50 years and there are great women out there, and they miss the point of what the other people are saying, who are saying, you know, hey, this isn't 50 years ago. Okay, boomer, this isn't 50 years ago. You know, it's much tougher out there now, you know, but then they get so jaded that they're convinced that, you know, all women are shit and there's no point in even trying. And you had the valid point at the other side, that is, if everybody takes up that attitude, then where are we? We're not going forth and being fruitful and multiplying as we're advised to do in the scripture. Isn't it amazing? So not to start preaching early, but isn't it amazing how all of the lies, all of the trickery in the modern world, it's always in conflict with the natural order. It's always in conflict with the scripture. God says, go forth, be fruitful, multiply. And yet, what do we see in our Western countries now, here in America, Western Europe? People are having fewer and fewer children. We're not going forth. We're not being fruitful. We're not multiplying. Why? Because as a people, we're listening to the lie. You're destroying the planet. You know, you're destroying the planet if you have children. Okay, well, maybe we should, like, have a mass sterilization program for Africa then, because that is an overpopulated area. Oh, you can't do that. You need to send food to them so they can keep reproducing. We need to bring those people into our countries so that, you know, maybe they can live a better life and they'll have more room to, you can, it'll be easier for you to feed them while they reproduce like crazy. You know, and so you wind up with our, once again, every part of our society, we sit around and wonder, why are our societies collapsing? You know, why are our Western nation, why is white civilization, you know, essentially dying? And it is. I mean, it's on the descent. It's on a downhill slide. I mean, that's observable reality for anybody who cares to look. And yet, time and time and time again, we see our societies, our people, in rebellion. And rebellion against God's natural order, rebellion against the things that God commands. God has told us this is what you need to do to have, you know, a prosperous a society, to be in line with the natural order. And one of those things is go forth, be fruitful, go forth and multiply, have, you know, have children. And again, our society says, no, that's not what you should do. Again, the lie. There's always the lie. Don't we, having a bunch of children, you're harming the planet. The planet is overpopulated as it is. You shouldn't be having children. Then on the flip side, oh, the demographics are horrible. The demographics are horrible. We're going to have to replace you with immigrants because, I mean, the economy, I mean, we've got to worship the almighty GDP. We've got to keep Wall Street up. We've got to have enough people here so that we can have perpetual growth in our economies, because that's good, supposedly. We don't know why. We're just told that it's good. We're told that perpetual growth on a graph is what we should be worshiping. That's the idol of the week so many times. And we wonder why is it that our societies are in decay, are in decline? And yet when you look at it time and time and time and time again, our people are in rebellion against the natural order. I mean, you can sit around and blame the Jews for all of it, all you want. And I'm not saying they're innocent in this, but it wouldn't be possible if the people weren't willing to abandon the natural order, if the people weren't willing to abandon what God has out and out told them, this is what you need to be doing. You know, it's like several weeks ago when we did our Fall of Man talk about the Garden of Eden. You know, I mean, they didn't put everything else. They didn't put all the blame. God didn't put all the blame on Satan and let Adam and Eve off the hook. You know, I mean, they bore a certain amount of responsibility. Satan didn't shove the apple in their mouths and force them to eat it. They had to make that choice. And it's the same way when we see your societies in collapse because our people are in rebellion against the natural order. Go forth, be fruitful and multiply. Oh, no, my career is more important. I saw a ridiculous article the other day about some Hollywood celebrity I've never heard of. And she's so successful. She's a producer. She's a director. She's, I don't know what the hell she is, because like I said, I've never heard of her. And, you know, oh, you know, she was writing something or kvetching about how sad it is because, you know, she's struggling to have a child now at something like 45 years old. And she's trying to have kids now, you know, a little late. You know, I mean, time doesn't, you know, time only flows in one direction in this life. And so now, you know, you're 45 and you've decided now I want to start having kids, and it doesn't work. You know, and she's running into that harsh reality. But what she's been doing for the past 20 years, you know, my career, that was what was important. You know, my career and being important and being a celebrity and accumulating more shekels. And these are the important things. But God said, go forth, be fruitful and multiply, you know, go reproduce, have produce children. This rebellion always comes back to a rebellion against the natural order. And you know, if you need the natural order spelled out for you, it's here. It's in God's word. He's the creator of the natural world. So, of course, he's going to give you basically a user manual for the hit the help button. You know, the big question mark, hit the help button is right here. This is the natural order of things written by the creator, the designer of the natural order itself. But we know better now. It's different now. Our careers and how many shiny things we have. This is what is important. And yet we wonder why our societies are collapsing. And thus concludes the first tangent we've gotten off on. Let's reel it back in to what we were originally going to discuss. This problem with the state of marriage in the West today, and in general, in the West in general, we'll say in America in particular, because obviously that's where I'm at. So we'll talk about America specifically, but I think it can pretty much apply to the West. So yeah, we get people and they're like, no, you've got to go. You've got to just risk it. You just got to blindly risk it. Go get married, because otherwise, how are you going to have kids? You got to be fruitful and multiply, right? You know, you've got to go out. Who cares? Who cares if you lose everything you have because you chose poorly? go out there and fulfill the 14 words. It's funny. What gets me is a lot of times the people that just advise folks to go out and blindly do this aren't married themselves. You know, it's like, well, I'm a single guy, man. I've got other things more important to do, but the rest of you, that's what you need to go do. And again, on the flip side, I guess what I'm saying here is, when you have this opposing view on this, it really, both sides to a certain extent are correct. It's not that because there are shades of gray, but I thought we would talk about, you know, the problem, why we have, I mean, you look at the divorce rates and you look at the state of marriages in this country. And I thought we'd talk a little bit and reflect a little bit on why that is, why it's in such a sad state. Now, I could be very simplistic here and say everybody's abandoned what God says, that men and women, husbands and wives, are roles they should play out. And that would be fairly true, but that's be true, but that's not what I'm going for here. I was thinking, just looking at things for what they are. Marriage got taken away. You know, we talk about the modern cuck church, but like so many things, it's a step by step by step by step taking, giving in, that has happened over many years. And days gone by, marriage was something handled by the church. I mean, the government pretty much didn't have anything to do with it. But then, you know, now you look around in our modern world, and marriage is something not really sanctioned by God at all. It's sanctioned by the state. We talk about your marriage vows, you know, and before God. Well, if it's really before God, then how come you have to go to the government to get permission? It used to be, but marriage was sanctioned essentially by the church, and a man that wanted to marry a woman would go to her father and ask for permission for her hand in marriage. And now you essentially go ask the state for permission for her hand in marriage. So God, really, when you get down to it, is except for like an honorable mention, except for window dressing. It's kind of like how the holidays have become like Christmas. It's like they'll put a little window dressing. Oh yeah, and a footnote here, asterisk, read down at the bottom. It's a Christian holiday about celebrating the birth of Jesus. But you wouldn't know that, you know, just walking up and down the streets and hearing about Black Friday madness and how you need to spend as much, you know, go into as much debt as you can, buying as much cheap, worthless crap as you can for the holidays. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Ooh, that's controversial. You're not even supposed to say Christmas. You know, it's because it might offend somebody who isn't a Christian. One thing Christians aren't allowed to do, and that's go offend anybody who isn't a Christian. But, you know, it's kind of like that. It's when you get down to it, any bare mention of Christ at Christmas is window dressing. It's the same way with marriage. They talk about, you know, you might get a line in there, what God had joined together, let no man put asunder. But it's really the state putting it together. I mean, you filed with the state. You asked permission from the state, and you decide it doesn't work out. The state will put asunder. We'll take it back apart. And in that way, it's elevating the state above God. You're worse off putting God in there at all. You'd be better off having one of these like completely non-Christian ceremonies, I guess, where you just promise and leave God out of it altogether. At least that way you wouldn't be, if it doesn't work out and you take it all apart, you're not elevating the state. Let no man put us under, but the state, that's higher than man and God. They can go ahead and take it apart. We've elevated to the state to the role that was once we gave to God. And, by proxy, the church. I mean, you have middleman there in the church. The church would sanction your marriages, church sanctioning your marriages, performing your marriage ceremonies. And if there was trouble in the marriage, you had to go through the church and figure out what that means. And you can, when you start viewing it this way, you realize what a difficult and complicated thing we're talking about fixing. I mean, the simplistic answer is, let's take marriage, the rite of marriage, and take it completely out of the hands of the state and give it back to the church. But do you think the state would just simply surrender that power? If you make that suggestion, what's the first thing you're going to run into? Yes, but what about divorce and how you've got to figure out how to separate property, and the church can't do that. Only the government can do that. We'll get to that in a minute. You run into that argument, but on a more bearing down on it, there's a bigger problem. Even if you did that, I mean, you've got to fix the church first. You think you get screwed in family court now? Imagine going to your modern cut church, you and your wife, it's not working out. So you're going to go to your man-hating lesbian minister, and she's going to decide between the two of you, how this, if you should split and how the property should be divided. You think you're getting raped in the family court now? Just imagine how that plays out. You go into your feminist, man-hating lesbian minister, and she's going to pick between the two of you. Yes, getting it back in the hands of the church long term, as far as fixing the problem with marriage in our society. Yeah, long term, that is something has to do, but you can see there's an immense amount of work that has to be done there. I mean, you've got to fix the church first. As the societal collapse comes about, you take that opportunity to seize that power that the state has and get it back into the hands of the church, of the believers, of the saints, and ultimately in the hands of recognizing it and submitting it into the hands of God. The thing about reflecting on things like this is the further you go, I mean, you think you realize how far downhill society has gone. You think you realize how far in rebellion man is against God. But the more you dwell on these, the more you realize, oh my gosh, it's way worse. It's way worse than I thought. You start bearing down. Okay, well, you should do that. But that means, and you just further and further down the rabbit hole, as it were. But it's really, you just get a bigger and bigger picture. You get into the details and you realize how bad it is. God bless America. I saw a funny thing that day. Somebody said, if God doesn't punish America, he owes an apology to Sodom and Gomorrah. And I thought that was pretty funny, to be honest, because it's so true. God bless America. And they always say the same thing. Well, we're still the best country on the face of the planet. And it's like, really? Also, have you gone to these other places to really see if America's better? I mean, why do you think America's better than any other place on the planet? Have you been there? No. I've never actually been out of my state. Yeah, but America's better. I know it is. Why? Because the fake news media has told me, and I saw it on the TV. So long term, fixing the problems with marriages, you have to get it back into the hands of the church. And before that can happen, you have to fix the church. you're starting to see why some of the stuff that we're doing, even, you know, our little part, and we're not single-handedly doing anything, but you see what we do with something like this church, like this show, where we try to uncut Christianity. It falls in line with trying to fix the church. Yeah, and thus, by a bigger, you know, an extension, trying to fix society. A sick society. You can just replace the government and all of a sudden your society is fixed. And there's a lot of people that think that. They think if we could just replace the government with another form of government, then our society would be fixed magically. But there's so much more to it than that. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not a part of it too, but there's so much, the people are broken. There's so many things that are required for a high trust functioning society, and all of those different aspects. I mean, they're sick. They're rotting. They're decaying. Some of them are completely unrecognizable. So you look at long term, you've got to fix the church. Now, if you could manage to somehow do that, you still have to get the people fixed. You've got to get the people back into a place to where they're in line with the natural order. It's a tough thing. People basically now pair up out of lust. I mean, you know, what is defined as love in the Bible is not what is defined as quote-unquote love today. Yeah, every love song that you listen to, you turn on just virtually any random love song on the radio, and you could take love and replace it with screwing, and it would be accurate. What is called love in our modern society, 9 times out of 10, is a synonym for sex. And we wonder why we have a high divorce rate. We wonder why we have a failure when it comes to the institution of marriage, because people are pairing up out of lust. They're not making logical decisions. So you're looking at long term, you had fixed the church, and then you got to get the people lined up somehow. And I think a part of that, I think a, you know, long term fix to that would be bringing back arranged marriages where the couples involved, your parents are arranging this, and like your parents are doing a background check. You know who these other people are. They're idiocy. And you take that whole emotional and that lusting thing out of the equation. And honestly, and people recoil at that. Yeah, how archaic of you, lampshade. You're just living in the Middle Ages or something. But it would be a really better basis for, if you're talking about people who are virtually a couple of strangers who really don't know anything about one another. What if the sex is bad? You will hear that argument. What if, my gosh, yes, because there's nothing more in life than screwing. That's the epitome of life. And you see how sick our society is. The only meaning in your life in this society is what kind of sex you're having. And you think you're immune to the degeneracy that the Jews are peddling? And yet so many of you, that is what the center of your life is. What kind of sex you're having. If you took two people, it wouldn't be complete strangers, and years past when arranged marriages were a thing. I mean, there would be as the date to where the agreement has comes to fulfillment, and they bring the young people together and they meet and they spend a little bit of, you know, they spend some time together. I would propose that is probably a better basis for real, actual love to be built upon than our wonderful modern society, where whoever you're in lust with this week, that's who you're going to base your lifelong commitment of partnership on, whoever you're in lust with this week.
What basis did you pick your husband on, Susie? He ran for 120 yards at the homecoming game in high school.
That's a great thing to be basing a lifelong committed decision on. And people will scoff at the notion of arranged marriages. I think that would be a very much a thing. And I'm sure the haters that listen into this show to try to find something to hate, congratulations. That's your freebie. Yes, how archaic, how backwards. See, they just want to oppress women. That's always a, you know, to oppress women. Well, if anything, it's probably, what about men? You know, maybe it's an oppressive thing to men. Men could never be oppressed. But I think as a realist. But these are long-term. These are long-term solutions to problems with marriage. Problems with marriage, when you look at it in the short term, in the shorter term under the current system, when you talk about the problems of marriage, it always comes down to the problem of divorce. The divorce rate is, of course, very high. And the problem, why do you have these divorces? You hear, boy, everybody knows a story. Maybe you, maybe your parents, who had this really, really ugly, ugly divorce. But why was it ugly? Why is it, you have people that spend, you know, you wind up, you spend thousands and thousands of dollars on lawyers, court fees in your divorce case. But why is it like that? Well, because you have to divide the property. You have children involved, and you've got to figure out child support and all of these other things. You're going to have to pay alimony to support her because she's your complete equal who can do anything you can do and can have a career just like you. But yet you're obligated to pay alimony to support her because, I don't know, reasons. You know, because this vagina isn't going to feed itself. Somebody's going to have to pay some. It's going to have to pay some money. No, the problem is you've got all of these questions of property. And we alluded to earlier when you talk about handing marriage back over to the church. That's one of the first things you will inevitably have people come up. Yes, but what about the division of property? You have these ugly divorces and you go to court and you wind up with these. Some of these people are in divorce court for years. But why? Maybe why is it that way? Why is it that complicated? Well, because when you get down to the brass tacks, as the saying goes, when you get down to it, divorce proceeding, you are annulling a contract. Because once again, we've handed marriage over to the state. So essentially, when you get married now, you're signing a legally binding contract. And when you get divorced by the state, you're dissolving that contract. And so you're going through court proceedings to dissolve a contract. But obviously, I don't like this modern notion of what you get down to the reality of what it is, of what marriage is. I don't like it, but it is what it is, as I always like to say. So the problem with it is you're signing a contract when you get married. You're signing a contract that has no terms spelled out in it. You look at a marriage license, which is essentially the contract, and there's nothing in there. I mean, there are no specifics. I mean, imagine if you had a business and you were going to take on a business partner. You're going to expand and I'll take this guy in as my business partner. We're going to go into business together. And of course, we've got to have a contract. And you just basically wrote something on a napkin. We is partners now. And you both signed it. You imagine the problems that would come from that when 5-10 years down the road, the partnership isn't working out for whatever reason, and you decide, okay, we need to tear this contract up, but we got to go to court. And you go to the judge, and the judge says, do you have a contract? Yes, we have a contract. Well, let's look at the terms of the contract. There are no terms. You just signed a napkin that said, we's partners now. Of course, it's going to be a mess. If you built a big business in the meantime, you're going to have this long, drawn-out proceeding. Why? Because there's nothing. There's nothing here. You always hear about you got to have a will. You know, you're all familiar with what happens if people that have a lot of assets die and they have no will. This stuff can go on for decades even in court. Years and years and years people fighting in court over the assets because there's no will. Why? There's no terms. There's no legal terms. So these people go to court. They fight over the assets of the deceased because the deceased didn't lay out. If you got a will, you go to court. And even then, sometimes people fight over. But for the most part, you have a hearing. And it's like, okay, well, let's get the will out. Well, they said, you know, Bob gets my new car, you know, gets my car. Jim and Susie, I leave you the house. Cheryl, you get the money in the bank. You know, I mean, it's spelled out and the hearing is a pretty cut and dried, simple thing because you got the will there. All they got to do is the formality of dividing it up as was the will of the deceased. Same way with a contractor. You've got a contract that's done correctly. You just get out the contract. Okay, here's the terms of the contract. We just have to follow this guideline. But when you get married, you're essentially signing your names on a napkin saying, we's partners now. And you wonder why divorces are such an ugly thing. So you have all of these lawyers involved. Can you imagine with that same scenario, you're going to take on a partner and you sign a contract and you don't have a lawyer draw it up for you? In this modern climate, it'd be great if we had a high trust society and things were sane where you could just sit down and, hey, this is what we'll do. And you didn't have to have lawyers involved and everything, but that's not the reality we live in now. So you imagine being a successful businessman and deciding we're going to take on partners in your business and not having lawyers draw the papers up. Just do it yourself. Well, I did it myself. How long did it take you? About 15 minutes. I just typed out this form letter and we signed it. No terms. Nothing specific. I am loath to have lawyers involved in anything, as most people are. But again, the reality of our modern sick society, you know, I mean, it is there. It's what we got. There's no reason. If you're going to have a bunch of lawyers involved in a divorce proceeding, why do you not have lawyers involved in the marriage proceeding? This gets to the short term under the current sick system. And they'll sit there, oh, that's horrible. I don't like what you're suggesting. We've got to overturn the system. The system is imploding on itself. But in the meantime, does it hurt to consider logical, rational ideas and thoughts? I would propose that under the current system, if marriage, when you get down to it, is nothing more, is at its essence, signing up a contract, does it not make sense that it should be drawn up by lawyers and they should be very specific? I think this would be, well, I don't think it's great because the long-term solutions we were talking about deserve that. This would be the traditional natural order way to approach things. But again, dealing with the current reality we have, I think this is the best option under the current system. You have lawyers involved. And I'm loath to say that. But you should have specifics of the contract going in. If you had marriage contracts drawn up specifically with the details in there, I mean, divorce proceedings could happen in an hour because it would just be like the reading of a will. You sit down, oh, well, we're getting divorced. Okay, well, where's your contract? Here's the contract. Okay, according to the terms that you signed, in the case that this doesn't work out, you've agreed that Mrs. Smith gets, you know, the house and a car, and she can have the kids 2 weeks out of the year. You've both agreed that you'll stay living within 50 miles of one another. Financial support, you agreed beforehand that this is what you... This isn't that hard. I mean, it would take an hour. You just simply, it's like a reading of a will. This was the terms you both agreed to. Another thing is it would force people to really know what it is that the person they're marrying wants. And I mean, you know, humans being humans, I mean, those things change. People change their mind on what they want. But at least going in, you would know. You look at people, and again, people essentially for now in this modern world, they get married out of lust. I mean, they're just operating off of that urge, the natural urge to reproduce. But it's mostly lust. She may say, I want to have kids. And you're like, yeah, I do too. I want to have kids too. Man, that's great. We have something in common. But the thing is, in your mind, you want to have like two kids. And in her mind, she wants to have like eight kids. You start drawing it up and your lawyer comes to her and says, okay, on the kids subsection, you will be agreeing that she will have at least six children and not more than eight children. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean? Six, eight. We talked about having kids. I was thinking two at the most. Well, no, she's got here a minimum. You agree a minimum of two and she agrees a maximum, no more than eight children. It gets these, flushes these things out to where people are, because as people get married with the lust drive, they're still obviously like how people do anything get laid. You know, and it's just an extension that people don't rock the boat because whether it's men or women, she thinks she's nailing her alpha dream guy. She's finally caught the big one, and she doesn't want to do anything to rock that boat. And likewise, the man thinks, man, she's hot. She's gonna be hot from here on out. This is great. And people don't try to actually flush out these hard things. What is it you want? What is it you expect out of life? People go in, and then when that lustful urge inevitably fades away, then you get down to the conflict over what you want in life. Should have been discussed beforehand, but it wasn't. And now you have the conflict over what it is you want in life. Well, when I married Jenny, I thought we understood she was going to stay home and have kids. And Jenny is like, I said I would stay home and have kids, but I've got to have a career. I've got to have a life too. And I just meant like one child. No, you were going to have four kids. In my mind, you were going to have four kids. We were going to have the white picket fence. I would work. I would come home. You'd have supper ready for me. There's no communication. Nobody really knew what the other person wanted going in. So they just signed a contract and said, we partners now. Oh, this wouldn't this flush the details out of people's motivations? I mean, your bride to be here. We're going over the terms her lawyer has sent over to me, Mr. Smith. As part of her conditions, you agree not to make less than $75,000 a year at any given time. And what? I can't guarantee that. Well, according to the proceedings, according to the term she's written up, you will provide a new car at least every 3 years, a house no smaller than 2,500 square feet. Wait, what? Flush out the details. It would flush out the detail. And then, there's a saying. There's a saying. You never divorce the same person you married. You know why? And there's so much truth to that. And you know why that is? Because when you get married, you're being driven by the reproducing instinct, essentially lust. And when you get divorced, all that's gone. Then you find out what people's motivations really are. Then it gets down to what you want and what kind of, and fighting over stuff. So in the short term, we got to wrap up. We got to get into although we've been pretty Christian specific in this as well, but our Christian specific message for this week, you get down to the short term problem with marriage. It is really by definition a legally binding contract. And when you get divorced, you'll find out that that's the case. If it's a legally binding contract when you get divorced, it should be treated as a legally binding contract when you get married. Let's wrap up on that note. Things to think about, things to ponder further. I'm sure there's further. I mean, we could sit here and do the whole show on that. I could keep going. I mean, we could keep rattling on this, but we covered the main points. And again, we want to get into our Christian specific message for you believers as we get to rocking on with the time we have left on this show. So if you're not sticking around for that, thank you for joining us. The rest of you, get in here, fill those pews. By the way, non-believers are always welcome to hang out and attend sermon in the Church of the Lampshade. So get on in here, fill those pews. Let's get started on our Christian-specific message this week here at the Church of the Lampshade. So as we, as you get settled in here for this week's Christian-specific message, we're going to kind of talk about something we've talked about. I know I've probably talked about multiple times over the years. But we're going to talk about it again, and I think it's because there's a little bit of a shift here. And again, these things are worth, if you went to church every day your entire life, at some point in time, I can virtually guarantee you the preacher is going to preach a sermon that the topic, although it's a little different angle, the topic is kind of the same stuff that you've heard at some point. I mean, that's just almost an inevitable thing. And it's kind of, I think, that way this week. And a lot of times I'll say that and people say, no, I don't remember you talking about that. But I've been doing this a long time. So I've been at this a while. So for me, it's like, I know I've talked about this before, but we're gonna talk about it again. And that is looking for the lie and why it's important to always look for the lie. When... if you've been dealing with commies on the internet for years, and many of you have, you know one of the things you need to do is to always look for the lie. That is always, you know, one of the best, you know, the solid advice I give out to people is when you start interacting with these people, don't take anything they say for granted. Down to the definitions of words. Don't assume that you're both operating under the same definition of a word because you're going to get tripped up. Always hold to the truth. Always force definitions. Always look for the lie because it's there. If you're dealing with somebody deceptive, somebody who is trying to use trickery on you, somebody who is promoting the lie, you'll find the lie. It will often be colored up. They'll put makeup on that pig, but it's still a pig. And you have to look for it. And this is important now because what I'm seeing, just kind of a casual observation, there's nothing scientific here. But one of the things I'm observing, I think, more, seems to me, is shills and such who are now LARPing as my fellow conservatives. And I think a lot of you have probably noticed this, too. You're seeing a lot of people, especially if you're stuck on the barren wasteland of social media, which is known as Gab. You're seeing a whole lot of, hello, my fellow patriots, I'm one of you. Hello, my fellow conservatives. We need to keep giving money to Israel. Don't worry about those Palestinians. You know, who cares? They're all terrorists anyway, right? By the way, let's let some more in our country. We've got to be for immigration. Well, as long as it's legal. You're seeing a lot of this LARPing, I think, and they're pretty easy to uncover because they're not very good LARPers, but they're pretty easy to uncover. But we're seeing more and more. There's a desperate attempt now to keep conservatism alive because it's essentially dead now, and nobody buys into it. I read an article, just to get off topic, which I always wind up doing. I read an article, I don't have it in front of me because it was actually in a physical newspaper, but I read an article the other day, and it was about some politician here in Texas. And it was essentially basically all about how LGBTQ, LMNOP rights have always been a part of our conservative values and how we have to embrace these things and be more accepting and be a big... It's just, it was like a meme of conservatism being played out in real life. It's honestly kind of funny because it's so laughable. I thought, my gosh, can you imagine if you didn't have the internet and people might actually believe this crap? But it was like a meme of conservatism. And conservatism, nobody believes this crap. Everything conservatives say, that the conservatism says that they're against, just give them a couple years when they compromise and give the commies everything they want. A few years after that, it's a part of conservative values and, in fact, has always been a part of conservative values. Because, you see, your principles don't matter. What matters is getting Team R elected so that they can do exactly what Team D would do, but maybe at a slightly different pace. Oh, and they'll throw in some talk about the Constitution. Conservatism, the only thing in conservatism that is constant, the only thing they're uncompromising on. This is where the roles between Team R and Team D kind of switch. If you're a commie listening in, just hoping to get something to, you know, you get off on being triggered. You're like masochistic like that. Here's something for you to observe. This is where the roles switch. The one thing conservatives don't ever compromise on, and that's aid to Israel and support for Israel. Doesn't matter how many Palestinian hospitals they bomb or schools or little kids they blow up and shoot. It doesn't matter. Aid to Israel is the one thing that Team R and the conservatives will never, ever compromise. That is the one conservative value they are willing, that's a hill they're willing to die on. And this is where the roles reverse, because Team D, the commies in power in Congress, when it comes to Team D in Congress, they'll periodically like make noises, you know, about we have to recognize the Palestinians' right to exist, and we're going to pass a non-binding resolution that will get zero publicity, but we'll put it in our fundraising letters to you about how we condemn Israel's latest bombing of a Palestinian preschool, killing 48 children. But when it comes down to the brass tacks, they're never ever going to vote against aid for Israel. They're always going to vote for aid for Israel. They might give you a little rhetoric, you know, and talk about how they're concerned about the rights of the Palestinians. But in the end, they're going to side with Tamar, and they're going to hand that aid over to Israel. Now, reel this back in from the latest tangent. Looking for the lie. Looking for the lie is important because you're dealing with a lot of these shills now. And if you don't look for the lie, I see people do it. They fall for the trap. And the trap is usually more or less the same kind of trap that when you're dealing with commies lying, it's the same kind of trap. I'll give an example of a recent interaction and how quickly it is. When you spot the lie, here's the thing, when you spot the lie and you call it out, you will shut it down. That's right. You will have the opportunity to shut it down. But you have to spot the lie. If you're going on and on and on and on with somebody, more than likely you didn't get the lie spotted because you didn't drive that thing in in the way to where it shut them up. When you spot the lie, most of the time, you'll have some that'll hang on and try to play little word games with you. But for the most part, if you get the lie, if you drive into the heart of the lie, they'll get real quiet real fast. I'll give an example of this, but before we do that, again, this is the Christian specific message. I mean, you may be sitting here going, what does this have to do with Christianity, Reverend Lampshade? This is just like a continuation of a regular visit. Well, this is everything to do with Christianity, because if you are a promoter, if you're a Christian, you have to be a promoter of truth. Let's get down here to our scripture, and this, I think, will feed in with the point I'm going to hopefully make. the point I'll hopefully make successfully before we're done. Let's do John, the book of John, chapter 8. We're going to start at verse 38. No idea where we'll stop. When I hit a spot, I think's pretty good. We'll stop. This is, we're starting off. This is Jesus speaking. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and ye do that which ye have seen of your father. Now, this, of course, is one of his many, honestly, borderline violent confrontations with the Pharisees. And it's violent in the sense that they're looking for a way to try. They want to kill him. I mean, I don't think it's possible. I try to read some emotion into these words and these interactions, you know, to convey. But I mean, these confrontations he had with Pharisees were very, very tense. I mean, you can bet people in the room that were watching this were like silent, you know, awkward. You know, I mean, just this tension. You could cut it with a knife. And they answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith unto them, if ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. And now ye seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth. Which I have heard from God. This did not Abraham. If you're Abraham's children, you'll do the works of Abraham. If you're the children, if you're the chosen people of God, you'll do the works of God. And yet ye seek to kill me. Ye do the deeds. We're continuing on verse 41. Ye do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, we be not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. This is a great example of Jesus turning the rhetorical tables on these people. He was really good at that. Jesus said unto them, if God were your father, ye would love me, for I have proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. It didn't come of my own being, of my own will. I came from God. That's essentially what he's saying here. Why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my word. Ye are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, ye believe it not. You ever notice that somebody that, like, how I, somebody who's a thief always assumes somebody's stealing from him? It's the same way with people that are habitual liars. A habitual liar will always assume that on some level you're lying to them. Yeah, it is. It's just one of those things. I mean, people will always superimpose their own habits, their own tics, their own beliefs, their own values or lack thereof onto other people. And thus a liar will always assume that you're lying. A scammer will always assume that you're scamming, that you're working some sort of angle, and so on. And here Jesus is saying, and because I tell you the truth, ye believe me not. They can't believe it. All they know is the language of their father. They're liars, so they assume he's lying. They can't accept it. There's no way they can accept it. He's speaking the language of God. They understand the language of their father, the devil. Which of you convinceth me of sin? And if I say the truth, why do you not believe me? He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. It's worth continuing reading there on your own, because it's a very heated, and if you read some emotion while you continue to read, we're going to stop there for the purposes of the show. I encourage you to keep reading the rest of the interaction, because it continues to escalate. It continues to get more tense. It continues to be more heated. I always find it funny how the modern, well, funny, but how the modern cut church is so non, it's like any sort of confrontation, any sort of conflict is sinful. I mean, that's really, when you get down to it, what their attitude is. That's why they roll over on everything, because any sort of conflict is basically like being sinful. Any sort of tension, we don't want tension in the air. We don't want to rock the boat. You read this, you read some emotion into the scripture we covered here, and like I say, if you'll continue reading it, I mean, Jesus kept escalating. Jesus wasn't even trying to calm things down. He's just ratcheting it up. He had them pinned, and he didn't ease out. He continued to drive it home. He continued to twist it right into them. This is also important because when you get in discussions with people that are so hung up on this belief that these modern day so-called Jews are God's chosen people, they're essentially saying they are the children of Abraham. What the Jews claim to be is that's their thing. But that doesn't even irk me, honestly. I mean, it doesn't, because every race thinks they're the best. I mean, every race is going to think they're like divinely chosen as special. I mean, you can't really hold that against them. That doesn't even really irk me. What irks me is Christians that make the same assertion. You're a Christian. You're supposed to, by definition, you are supposed to be a believer and a follower in Jesus Christ. And yet you're running around saying, man, God's chosen people, and thus the children of Abraham, are these modern day Jews, when Jesus himself is saying you're not the children of Abraham. Now, somebody might come try to argue against that and say, well, you're saying these they're not the chosen people of God, but yet on the flip side you're saying they're the Pharisees, or they're not the chosen people of God. Then how can you be so sure that they are basically of the same stock as these Pharisees in the scripture? Because they're speaking the same language. They are of the lineage of the Pharisees, not because you could somehow genetically trace them back to the Pharisees. I don't know if you could do that or not. I suspect you probably could. But it doesn't matter, because spiritually, if you could do like a DNA spiritual trace, they're speaking the exact same language. They're going after Christ and ultimately the disciples for speaking the truth. The whole book of Acts is basically one huge attempt to shut it down. They're speaking the same way. It doesn't matter the genetic lineage at this point. I suspect there's probably some there. I don't know. But what's important and the point that Christ is making here is you are speaking your language of your father, the devil, and they're having a meltdown. Oh, how dare you? How dare you? We are not born of fornication. We have one Father, even God. And Christ says, you're trying to kill me for speaking the truth that you're of God? No, you're speaking your language, the language of your father, the devil. He's a liar and a murderer. There's no truth in him. People say, how do you come to the beliefs? How do you come to have these beliefs? Because I seek the truth. How do you change your beliefs? Well, if I find out that I was incorrect about the truth and I find out that the truth is something different, then I will alter my views to the new covered facts, to the new, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee I'm right on everything 100% of the time in every aspect of life. You know, I had views 10 years ago that now I look at and shake my head. It's like, wow, what the? Wow, I was way off base with that. But at the time, I thought it was the truth. If you earnestly and honestly seek the truth, you're probably going to wind up somewhere around where I'm at. Or, hey, if you're really blessed, maybe further ahead. If you're spotting the lie, you're spotting the works of the devil. It doesn't matter what the topic is. And that's the other thing you have to remember. So often when the apostles were persecuted, or even when Christ was persecuted, they were always looking for something else. He's rebelled. He declares himself to be above Caesar. That's a violation of the political rules. He's probably wanting to foment a rebellion against Rome itself. That's right. He's a traitor to Caesar. He's a traitor to Rome. Of course, we all know, or you should know. God, I hope you know. If you're a Christian believer, it had nothing to do with the reasons why they called for his execution, why they persecuted them. It didn't have anything to do with, that was the excuse. They couldn't go to the government and say, shut this guy down, even if it's the ultimate shutdown of execution, because he's speaking the truth and we're having a spiritual fight here and we're losing. They couldn't do that. Because the government be like, yeah, no, that's not really our problem. So they have to make up that it's about he wants to rebel against Caesar. It's because he's speaking the truth. So the topic doesn't even necessarily have to be specifically about these spiritual things directly. If you are speaking the truth, if you are speaking the truth in the face of the lies of this world, then you are fighting on a spiritual battlefield, whether Christ comes up or not. The truth. You're seeking to kill me because I speak the truth. If you loved God, you would accept me because I'm from God. That's what Christ said. Now, getting back to looking for the lie, because if you are always fighting a spiritual battle, regardless of the topic, if you're fighting a spiritual battle because you are speaking truth and others are promoting lies, it only makes sense that you should be looking for the lie. Again, I honestly almost pity people that are non-believers that are at the same time trying to struggle against this corrupt current order because they're not aware that this is a spiritual battle and honestly, they're ill-prepared in a lot of ways for the battlefield because they don't understand the underlying context here. They would be at the forefront arguing this man didn't have anything. He doesn't have anything to do with trying to overthrow Caesar without understanding the underlying context of the spiritual battle that is taking place here. God against the devil, truth against the lie. Always have to look for the lie. And it's important because we're seeing a lot of shills now, again, that are masquerading. The modern church is full of them. But you look for the lie. They'll reveal themselves. They can't help it. Even if they know you're looking for it, they can't help it. Because in the end, they can't help but to speak the language of their father, the devil. And no, I'm not just talking about the Jews.
There he goes. He's calling the Jews children of the devil. If they speak the language of their father, they're acting as children of the devil. I mean, people get things wrong. I'm not trying to be super harsh. I'm not talking about people who are just genuinely misguided. And if shown the truth, and they are capable of accepting it. But again, as we read in the scripture here, those who are of the devil, who are children of the devil, are incapable of accepting. That's one of the ways you know. You know, people say, well, how do you know? I mean, he could just be one of God's children who's misguided. Well, that's possible. This is true. I mean, people aren't born into being believers. Sometimes they have to take the long way around. Many of us have had to take the long way around in a lot of ways in growing, in spiritual growth. This is true. But one of the big tells of this is, are they capable of accepting the truth? Because the children of the devil are incapable. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how true it is. They are literally incapable of accepting the truth. So always look for the lie. Now, the little interaction I was referring to that actually kind of got me thinking about talking about this week. It was over on the social media wasteland that is known as Gab. And I don't feel like looking it up. I'm lazy. Because I can get to the point of the story just off the top of my head. I had a post up about something. I don't even remember what it was. It wasn't anything about the Jews or World War II or Adolf Hitler or anything. I don't even remember what it was. It was probably something about, I don't know, conservative shilling or something. I don't know. And this guy responds. And his response was something like, yeah, well, this coming from somebody who idolizes someone who, I don't know, destroyed the 6 million or something like that. Idolizes. This from someone who idolizes somebody who's responsible for the worst atrocities in human history. Now, I'm not repeating it word for word, but it was a long line. The main point here is the opening salvo was from somebody who idolizes a man who is responsible, idolizes a man. Do you see the lie here? How many of you, just be completely honest with yourself, would have fallen for the bait and started talking about how, you know, it's mathematically impossible for 6 million Jews to have been gassed in fake shower rooms made out of wood and bug spray, and Adolf Hitler, you know, he didn't do anything wrong, and you fell, and you wind up in this circle jerk. Because why? Because you didn't spot the lie. Well, and it was right there. And sometimes you have to look twice. You know, sometimes you get looped into having like a knee-jerk emotional reaction. My response was something in the line along the line of, and this works, by the way, for those who are right now shilling as, hello, my fellow Christian conservatives. It works really good. My response was something along the lines of, and again, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, so I'm just off the top of my head, but something along the lines of, I idolize no man as I am a follower of Jesus Christ. You have chosen to speak the language of the devil, as you have chosen to try to slander with a lie. And for what? Some kind of signaling point on the internet, and yet you didn't get a single like? Sad. It's something along that line. And you know what he responded with? Nothing. Nothing. Because he can't. You know, when you get near radio, once you achieve radio silence, you know you stabbed the lie. And the lie was right there. This from somebody who idolizes a man. And how many of you would fall for that little trick? So you see, there's nothing wrong with, you know, bringing out the facts that, you know, it's mathematically impossible for 6 million and it's ridiculous for the shower. But the problem with that, the problem becomes you seeded the ground. You know, you sit here and say, well, it's an opportunity to explain to people that the Holocaust, as defined as people 6 million gassed and put on masturbation machines and pedal-powered skull smashers and roller coasters that flew into the ovens, is a lie. But the problem, and you're right, but the problem is, in doing so, in skipping over, in letting the lie go, you've seeded the ground. You have, by a omission, you have given away the ground that you idolize a man, that you're an idolater. Are you willing to give that ground? Are you willing to let somebody sit here and call you an idolater?
You're willing to let that ground go? For what? Another endless conversation that they're not going to listen to anyway? Because they're not, they're just looking to deceive you. They were able to label you an idolater and you let it go. Not because you're okay with it, but because you didn't spot the lie. You had an emotional reaction. Oh, well, I'm going to lay this guy out with some facts. But you didn't spot the lie, and you let the lie stand. You let somebody label you an idolater. The 6 million in this instance is really irrelevant. Their point was to slander you and label you and accuse you of idolatry. And you let them get away with it. I'm not saying you. I'm just, if this situation hypothetically was applied to so many people, and I'm not patting myself on the back, I'm a liquid idiot. Yeah, that's not my point. My point is, I want you to understand that the fight, the spiritual fight you are in, when you boil it down to your essence in this world, is truth versus the lie. It is a spiritual battle. Christ has laid out in the scripture that we have covered here, the devil, and thus the children of the devil are incapable. They're incapable of the truth. Now, they may throw some facts to you. Don't confuse that with truth. They may throw some facts your way to kind of spice things up. But when you get down to the essence of it, you will find the lie. They're incapable of the truth. This also is how you will find those who are simply, perhaps, potentially children of God, that they're just misguided. They're sullied on, you know, they're jaded. They've given up on religion or whatever the case may be. But they're capable of listening to the truth. They're capable of accepting the truth. It doesn't make them new because they say, well, I'm not a Christian, I'm an unbeliever. But if they're capable of listening to the truth, then there's a good chance of what you're dealing with here is a child of God that just doesn't know it yet. But rest assured, when you're dealing with a child, with the children of the devil, they're completely incapable of accepting the truth. That's why it's also important to always look for the lie. It clues you in on what you're dealing with. And if you nail that lie, you watch. When you nail them down with that lie, you'll know it. You will know it. You sit here and rattle off Holocaust statistics all you want to. And you'll know this and you'll get frustrated because it's not having any effect. But if you nail down that lie, you'll tell. You can tell. Even over the interwebs, you can tell by the reaction. By you got that lie nailed. They weren't able to pull it off. You always want to look for the lie, folks, because you are in a spiritual battle. It's truth versus the lie. As children of God, as God's chosen people through Christ Jesus, as laid out in the scripture, it is by extension your job to always seek the truth and always watch out for the lie. We'll wrap up on that note. Thank you to those of you financially supporting the show. Very much needed. Very much appreciated. Once again, encourage you to do so. That information is at the bottom of the show, or at the bottom of the show notes, rather. Encourage you to do so. Again, listener questions, comments, welcome as well. So we're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining us this week. I wasn't able, due to the holidays, to be on for Friday's installment of Clown World in Review, aka the Daily Nationalist, but I do plan to be back on this Friday, so look forward to that as well. We'll see you then, and we'll see you right here next week for the Church of the Lampshade.